Well, thank you. I've had a really nice birthday. I had one of the little boys. He said he wanted to guess how old I was, and he guessed high, people. So I had to train him. Young man, when you guess low. But I was able to sign up for Medicare for the, I don't want to say how old I was, but I was able to sign up for Medicare this month. That'll tell you how old I am. Any ideas how to segue from that? How do you get it? Yeah, we're grateful that you're here. Thanks for coming. I know if it's the first time or one of your first times, I know it's hard to step into a new place. And we are glad you did. If you're joining us online, where is that camera? Where's our red camera, the dot, wherever it is? I'm glad you're here. Joining us online too. So when I was a kid, we moved from the Boston area to the Detroit area. I was 6 years old. And very quickly, we got to know the neighbors. Then there was one neighbor we were to stay away from. His name was Chucky Lamb. He had long hair, and he was from a divorced home. And the message was, boys, stay away from Chucky. And if that wasn't bad enough, he had a couple older brothers who would crank the rock music. So those of you who are old enough, do you remember Joy to the World by Three Dog Night? It had a guitar riff in it. Oh, did that get to my parents? That is evidence you need to stay away from Chucky. Yeah, Chucky was on the margin because of his hair and because of his music and because of his family. Now, we lived there over 7 years, and things began to change. And eventually, about year five or six there, my dad ended up paying his registration to be on the same rec basketball team because the family couldn't afford it. But initially, found out the kid wasn't that bad, but initially was the way he looked, you stay away. We have people like that, don't we? They got a lifestyle choice or a political persuasion, or they're a certain ethnicity, or they're a certain job. They're one of those, you know, they're one of the rich folks. You know how those rich folks are, don't you? Or they're poor folk. You know how those poor folks are, don't you? And they are on the margin. You don't. Well, Jesus spent some time on earth. He spent 3 years in public ministry, and he had all kinds of time around people who were on the margin. And this morning, I'd like to take a look at what was Jesus' attitude toward people who are on the margin. So if you got a Bible, if you'd open that to Luke chapter 5, we're going to start in verse 12, and we're going to go through verse 32, wrestling with this question. What is Jesus' attitude towards marginalized people? What is Jesus' attitude towards marginalized people? If you've been with us, the book of Luke is an effort that Luke put forward in the very first century. There was a guy named Theophilus, probably a Gentile convert. Maybe he had some questions. And Luke did a detailed study of Jesus' life. He talked to a bunch of eyewitnesses. Very careful study. And in fact, 30% of the material in Luke's gospel doesn't appear in any of the other three gospels. And we found out that Jesus was born of a virgin, a work of God, and that he spent 30 years working as a carpenter. He was an apprentice carpenter. His dad was a carpenter. And then at 30 years old, he stepped into public ministry. The crowd started following him. He started doing crazy stuff like freeing demon-possessed people and healing people who had fevers. And so the crowds are coming, and they've got their desires and wants, and that's where we pick it up in chapter 5, verse 12. It says, while he, Jesus, was in one of the cities, behold, there was a man covered with leprosy. Now, if ever there's somebody who was physically on the margin, it was a leper. They lived in leper colonies. They kept a distance from the general public. And when they got close, they had to call out, unclean, unclean. If they were to approach a person, they could be stoned for that. Now, that's a person on the margin. You stay away. Except that changes when Jesus shows up. It says this, and when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and implored him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. So he approaches Jesus, and he falls down, showing that he believes he's God. Obviously, he's heard about Jesus, and he feels free to approach. Not too worried about getting stoned, I guess. He says, if you're willing, and maybe he doesn't have his theology about Jesus all figured out. Maybe he's got some stuff that maybe he doesn't understand the grace and mercy of God. So if you're willing, you can make me clean. So before we go into farther into this, I need to ask you and me, We got people on the margin. Again, because of lifestyles, because of politics, because of race, because of ethnicity, because of socioeconomic status. And you don't have to answer me, but I'm asking you in your heart, who are those people? Because Jesus, I think, is going to challenge the way we deal with people on the margin. Jesus says, he stretched out his hand and touched him. Remember, if you touched a leper, you were considered unclean and you had to do a ceremonial washing. That doesn't bother Jesus. He said, I'm willing, be cleansed. And immediately the leprosy left him. And he ordered him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing. I don't want you to say anything because the people of Israel have their idea of what the Messiah would look like, and I'm not anything like that, so I don't want any of those expectations laid on me. But you are going to have to go yourself and show yourself to the priest, because that was the process you went through to be incorporated into the community. So the priests are going to know. And then you make an offering, because God has done an amazing work, just as Moses commanded, as a testimony to them. Think about what it was to be a leper. You can't be with your family. What's Thanksgiving? A couple, 3 weeks away. We're planning family Thanksgiving. Sorry, you can't come because you're unclean. You're on the margin. Hey, we're all getting together to watch the Husker football game. And they did win last night, didn't Blake? Did they win last night? They did. Okay, yeah. But we're all getting together to watch Husker game, but you can't come because you're on the margin. And that favorite place you'd like to go to eat? Can't go. That's a public place. First time I was out of the country for an extended time, I was on a mission trip in Istanbul, Turkey. We were there about 8 weeks. About week six, you know what we started doing on our team? Man, what's the first place you're going to go when you get home to eat? Because we've been eating chicken and rice and bread for most of the summer. It's kind of like, man, where are you going to go? I can't wait to go to fill in the blank. Well, if you're a leper, it's kind of like, where would you like to go? You can't go, but where would you like to go? 6 weeks. And we were dreaming where we could go. And all of a sudden, this guy is released from all that. He can now enter those communities because of the grace, mercy, and power of God. Verse 15, but the news about him being Jesus, was spreading even farther, and large crowds were gathering to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. Man, Jesus has got it going, people. There is a buzz about Jesus. People are coming. People are showing up. And what do? When you got the world in your hand, well, you lean into it, right? Right? I mean, you want to keep the momentum going. You want to gather that kind of... It's not what Jesus does. Look at verse 16. But Jesus himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. What? What? Jesus, man, you got it going. No, I got something more pressing than the adulation of the world. I got something far more life-giving than popularity. Oh, what is that? Time with the Father. See, Jesus understood that life came from God, not from out there, but up there. Yeah, the world can, the offers can look pretty enticing, and we can buy into it. Let's ask the Spirit to build this conviction in us. Where we go for life is to get away to be with the Father. If it's true for the eternal Son of God, how much more for us would we follow Jesus' model on that? So we're transitioning. Verse 17, one day, shows that there's some time has passed. He, Jesus, was teaching, and there were some Pharisees and teachers of the law sitting there who had come from every village of Galilee and Judea and from Jerusalem. And the power of the Lord was present for him to perform healing. So religious officials are coming from all over, and they're not coming because they want the message. They're coming to monitor. You got the Bible police here, folks. They're looking for an error. Because they're very concerned about the popularity. And it says here, and the power of the Lord was present for him to perform healing. They don't have that kind of power. And Man, remember, this is a theocracy. They have civil authority and they have spiritual authority, and Jesus is challenging that. So they show up. Boy, did they show up. So Jesus is teaching, and some men were carrying on a bed a man who was paralyzed. And they're trying to bring him in and to set him down in front of him. So they've heard. They want to get their friend healed. So they think, well, we'll just carry this guy over and we'll bring him down in front of Jesus. But they got a problem, verse 19, but not finding any way to bring him in because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and let him down through the tiles with the stretcher into the middle of the crowd in front of Jesus. And let me tell you what strikes me as a preacher. They're interrupting his message here. That's just really bothersome. Through the roof, here comes this guy. But you know what? Jesus is not put out. In fact, he's touched. Now, why would you do that? Why would you? Oh, man, there's a lot of people. We'll just come back another day. That ain't what they're doing. We got to find a way. Well, what's it going to look like? Well, tell you what, we'll climb up. You hold them, and we'll kind of work our way up on the roof, and then we'll get to a point where Jesus is, and we'll dig a hole in there, and then somehow we'll let them down. Why do you do that? Because you believe the guy down there has authority, has power to do something. If you're not convinced of that, you're not going to this kind of effort. They believe. They have faith that all this stuff they've heard about is true. And verse 20, Jesus sees that faith. Look, seeing their faith, he said, friend, your sins are forgiven you. Something about faith moves Jesus. It's a dependence. It's a trust. Oh, Lord, I can't, but you can. Jesus sees that and forgives the man's sin. Now, the Bible police kick in. Here we go. Verse 21. The scribes and the Pharisees begin to reason, saying, who is this man who speaks blasphemy? Who can forgive sins but God alone? Did you hear that? Did you hear what he said? He said he forgave sin. No one can do that. We got him. Did you get that on video? Did you get that? We got him. He's busted. So they're having this discussion. We have him. We got him dead to rights. The trouble is, like, you know, if you have a discussion back there among yourself, I don't know. But Jesus is different. He knows everything you're thinking. He knows everything you're saying. And he's aware of what's going on. Verse 22. But Jesus, aware of their reasonings, answered and said to them, why are you reasoning in your hearts? Why are you having this discussion? Which is easier to say, your sins have been forgiven you, or to say, get up and walk? Okay, so here's the deal. For me and for you, it's easy to say your sins are forgiven because there's no way to really empirically check that out. And you may think, Pastor Andy's gotten a little whacked. That birthday, he's gotten a little old, and he thinks he can forgive sins. But, I mean, there's no way to see it proven wrong. But to say to a paralytic, get up and walk, well, that can be verified, can't it? Either it's going to happen or it doesn't. So Jesus boxed himself in. He said, I can say one as easy as the other. And just so they know the reason he's asking these rhetorical questions, he tells them in verse 24, but so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. Remember back in verse 21, they're having, can he forgive sin? Can he forgive sin? Jesus said, I know you've been saying that, and just, I'm going to answer your question, just so you know that, yeah, I do have the authority. I'm going to say to the paralytic, I say to you, get up and pick up your stretcher and go home. So you can know this is happening. I'm going to tell this guy, get up and walk. For the first time in your life, get up and walk. Take your stretcher and go home. That's a moment of truth, isn't it? I mean, either it's going to happen or it's not. And if it doesn't, I would say Jesus' earthly ministry is done. You've done a lot of good stuff, but dude, you just got exposed right here. You don't have the power you say you did. So it's pretty significant. The result, verse 25. Immediately he got up before them, picked up what he'd been lying on, and went home glorifying God. So that answers the question of whether or not Jesus can forgive sin. That's an emphatic yes. They were all struck with astonishment and began glorifying God. And they were filled with fear, saying, "We have seen remarkable things today." Yeah, you really have. And Luke saved that testimony for us. See, that's why Jesus came to forgive sin. Sin is rebellion against God. And we were created to live in relationship with God, under his leadership and his direction. And we all push back. 2,000 years ago, Jesus came and lived the life we were supposed to live, died on a cross and rose from the dead in order to forgive our sin, in order to forgive our rebellion. And when we trust him, he comes into our life and forgives our sin and allows us to live the way God designed us to live. And so that's the message. That's why Jesus came. And so Jesus is committed to getting this message out, even to people on the margin. And we see that again in verse 27. After that suggests there's a period of time that went by. He went out and noticed a tax collector named Levi sitting in the booth, in the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." Now you need to understand, if the leper was on the margin physically, the tax collector's on the margin socially. Israel was occupied by Rome. The tax collectors worked for Rome. On tolls, on real estate, wherever, they charged people money and they turned it over to Rome. And they would use their authority to overcharge so they could line their pockets. Who wants to challenge the authority of Rome? So they were despised by the people of Israel. If there was everybody that was a pariah, that you stayed there because you are disgusting, that you work for our occupying force, it was a tax collector. And Jesus comes along to Matthew and said, "You follow me." Verse 28, and he, Matthew, left everything behind and got up and began to follow him. And he did. And Matthew wrote the first gospel we have. Matthew ended up dying for his faith. I had a seminary professor who said, "I don't think Matthew ever got over the fact that Jesus loved him." He had been pushed to the extremes of society. And Jesus came along and said, "You follow me." Well, Matthew's kind of overwhelmed. So what does he do? In verse 29, Matthew gave a big reception for him in his house. And who's there? There was a great crowd of tax collectors and other people who were reclining at the table with them. So now we just don't have one tax collector. We got a whole bunch of them. And Jesus is right in the middle of the thing with these people who are on the margin. Listen to me. Jesus was never concerned about guilt by association. Okay? He didn't condone what these people were doing. But he said, "Before I start coming down on you, I'm moving towards you and I'm building a relationship with you." Not concerned about guilt by association, concerned with people who are lost and alone on the margin. What's Jesus' attitude towards marginalized people? Jesus sought them out. Jesus seeks out marginalized people. Those who are despised, those who are hated, those who are loathed, Jesus is going after them. Isn't that good news? I think it is. Because I know I've fallen short of God's desire and God's plan. I'm on the margin spiritually, and yet Jesus came after me. Came home to me my freshman year in college. So I ought to be pretty excited about that. Everybody excited about that? Not everybody. Verse 30 to 32. The Pharisees and their scribes began grumbling at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Those are the people we avoid. Those are the people we say, "Stay away. You get your act together, and then maybe we can talk." Jesus, those are people avoiding, and you're getting them to follow you, and then you're having a party with them, and you're right in the middle. What are you doing? See, it's the difference between a works-based system to get God's favor and a grace-based system. Here's what Jesus says, verse 31. "It's not those who are well who need a physician, but those who are sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Remember, when we moved into the house, parents saying, you, him, okay. But him, you stay away. That long hair, that divorced home, that rock music, you stay away. And Jesus would not agree with that. He said, no, you move towards those people. Why? Because they are people who are broken and they're willing and they're responsive to the gospel. So I'm wondering, if we took a video of my life for the next month, or let's say we'll take a video of your life, and we just looked at a month, would there be enough evidence to convict us of being a Christ follower based on the way we moved towards marginalized people? Would we be guilty? Well, they, oh, you must be a Jesus person because you keep moving to those people on the edges. You must be because you keep moving towards those people who everybody else says, ooh, stay back. Would there be enough evidence to show we're Jesus followers because we're moving towards marginalized people? One of the things I find fascinating about Matthew being a disciple is there were 12 of them, and there was this guy named Simon the Zealot. So there was Simon Peter, and there was Simon the Zealot. We don't know much about Simon the Zealot, but we do know Zealot referred to somebody at the very least who was fervent, deeply committed to the Jewish way of life, the Jewish teachings, and would have loathed the presence of the Romans. Zealot can also refer, and we don't know if this was Simon or not, to people who were in favor of an armed uprising to throw the Romans out. So you got the 12 disciples, you got the one guy who was cozy with the Romans, and you got the one guy who was an extreme who was hating them. And Jesus said, hey, what, you know, we're going to be a team, and we're going to love one another, we're going to work together, and we're going to reach the world together. I mean, I'd say they might have even had different politics there, people. Jesus said, that don't matter. We're coming together because we're people committed to reaching everybody, particularly those on the margin. So again, I asked you before, and I'll ask you again, for you, who are the people on your margin? And I've got different categories, lifestyle, politics, race, socioeconomic class. There could be a bunch of things. Would you answer that question before the Lord? Because see, if we're going to be Jesus followers, we're moving towards those people. I never saw the movie, the Disney rendition of Beauty and the Beast, but the movie, the title kind of intrigued me, so I got out on Wikipedia, and I read about it, and the arrogant prince is cursed, and he will live as a beast until he finds true love. The trick is, when you're a beast, it's hard to find someone to love you. And there's all kinds of stories, and this is an animated movie, but the beauty, Belle, chooses the beast, and I saw a little montage, and he's transformed. And you say, man, only in Disney. No, also in the gospel. You know who the beauty is? It's Jesus. Perfection. No sin, no scar, no spiritual marks. You? Me? Pretty ugly. Got a lot of stuff, a lot of self, a lot of things we regret. All of us, we're the beast. And the beauty came and he moved towards us. He gave his life. And like that beast was transformed in the movie, if you will accept the offer of Jesus' love, he will transform you too. One, that we'd embrace that. We'd allow Jesus to change us from the inside out. We'd allow the Spirit of God to work in our lives. And as he's working, we would ask him to empower us to move towards those people that we would normally resist. We would move towards those people who are on the margin. What's Jesus' attitude towards marginalized people? He seeks them out. He pursues them. Jesus seeks out marginalized people.